What hey, everyone. Time? I'm your host, Jack the Generalist. Today, we're joined by Alexandra, a senior technical artist at Twin Harbor. Alexandra bridges art and code and performance in her work. And I want to ask her now if she could tell you, the viewers, about who she is and what she does. What do you do, Alexandra? Tell us.
I am Alexandra Rutkowska, and I'm a senior technical artist, and I mostly work with shaders now, which is the best. And I'm now trying to revive my laptop that actually died of the overheating. so I don't have a visual of you, so I'm just talking to black screens.
Oh, no.
What is someone doing? I'm doing some VFX, I'm doing some UI. I'm helping artists live through contacts with programmers so I can speak the programmer's language and the artist's language to each of the parties and can agree on something.
Perfect.
yeah, that's mostly that, but my love and joy is our shaders, definitely, and rendering.
And so you do you do your shaders, like what are the tools that you use for shaders, and which engine do you work with mostly?
I mostly work with Unity. I work with Unreal Engine as well, the version 4 and 5, as I don't think the shader graphs are that different. They are still implementations of HLSL. So I also write the base HLSL shaders if that need can be. But I've noticed that there's more and more push to use the shader graphs, especially in small projects, just so everybody can read the shader. You don't need the you have to have some kind of imagination and knowledge of HLSL to predict what's going to happen if I change something in code.
Yeah.
When compared to the shader graph, we can just see the output immediately, and that's not a problem anymore.
Okay, so second question is, can you take us through your journey into art or tech art in that example? Where did you start and what are your first steps?
That was very funny because I'm ancient. So I landed in uni when I was, it was 2011, I think, 2010. And I went to architecture because I always was kind of this artistic and strong in mathematics and physics was my favorite subject. But I always loved games, but I didn't know quite how they were made. And my only contact with how-to was the extended version of Witcher 1 when they actually included some making-ofs.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, okay, so this is how it's done. Nice. And then during the architecture studies, we entered the era when we could finally use software. And then we were learning Revit and ARCHICAD, but also I found out that you can make architectural visualizations through 3ds Max and V-Ray. And that was my realization, oh my God, this is it. This is how you make assets for games.
Nice.
This is the same software. So I started learning that. Prevailers channels, because that was like a start of YouTube, I think, in Poland. So we didn't have much tutorials. So they were gatekeeped by some money. Or like even you couldn't buy it because you were from Poland. That was also a thing. So through various channels from various forums, you could get your grab on your own information on some tutorials. There was a big architecture visualization firm in Poland that offered those, so I spent a lot of money there. And this is how it started. And I was building my portfolio, just having fun. Then I found out what Unity is and started having fun there. That's how it started. But yeah, I finished architecture and then the 1 year before I finished architecture, there was this competition to get an internship at CD Projekt Red, which was, well, obviously I'm from Poland, I have to say it. My favorite game is Witcher 3, because otherwise they'll take my citizenship. So of course I was super excited. It was the year after it was released, or it was the release year, something like this. And I applied. I get to get a test, do the test. The test was too difficult for me at that time. Mm-hmm. But they were very nice that I got a feedback back, like what I could improve.
Yeah.
And from Ms. Ortega, hello. I don't think she's still there, but yeah, she's great. And I didn't get it, but the next year they did the same in a bit different setup, and that was in-house. We were going in rounds, and you got a task to do in within 1 hour, and that one I passed. So I was so lucky to start working in games industry without a games industry degree, literally 1 month after I graduated architecture. It was like, I can't believe my luck, because this is just luck at this point.
Well, it's also like hard work of like, it is luck, yes, in the sense of like you got into the software that kind of got you into the whole pipeline, but you had the spark. You were already like, okay, this is the program I can do this with. You had two choices. Either you continue and learn it, or you would have said, I just gotta finish my studies first. But you did it, so that's luck plus work. I think opportunities are the perfect definition of opportunities is hard work combined with luck. That is like what an opportunity is.
For sure. I think that there's a lot of luck involved, just in general in life, that you just get an opportunity or you don't get it. But there's also a factor of bravery in that, right?
Oh, that's a very important word there, bravery. And boldness. Sometimes you just have to be bold with your applications. Like what I've noticed so far, a lot of the women that I have on the podcast or that I know in the industry are so fearful of applying whenever the job description says something like C# is mandatory, while all the guys are not even reading the description, applying, sending their application anyway, and then they land the job. Why? Because one actually send up, you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take, right? And
yes.
That is a problem.
It's also a very important thing to know that that's what someone from one of the HR people that I worked with, that you always have to remember this is the ideal candidate. They always overscope.
Yeah.
So even if you don't meet, if you meet half of this, just do it, just apply, and see what happens. Because the worst that can happen, you have a first talk and they will just never speak to you again.
Absolutely.
Right? But that's it. So there's no fear in that. There's no in general. Act more, worry less.
Yeah.
Although it's very hard for me to say because I used to have a severe anxiety, and that was much better. But definitely, just do it. Don't think it. Just don't let your brain enter the phase of thinking. Just do it before it starts saying you things.
Basically, be a guy in a way. Guys,
in a way, just act first.
Act,
this one time,
think
just act
later.
First. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's not even a risk. You're not losing a limb or anything. You're not putting. So the thing is, they're so afraid of applying so that their name is not, polluted, or that they're leading someone on in the wrong way. But it's at the same time, your name is not out there if you don't send it.
Exactly.
You need
exactly.
to send the application if the description to 60% or 70% fits your skills. Like you said, the HR people, I lived with an HR person. They told me, hey, you know what we do? We filter people. We want only those who are confident enough to apply. But the problem is you have people who are, they don't care. They're like, I'm confident anyway. I'm just going to apply, and they probably landing the job. Well, maybe the woman on that side is even better than them, but they were just too afraid to apply,
Yeah. that's gender specific, but maybe that is to like to. My boyfriend's now looking for a job. He's also a technical artist, and I always say, and he's like, "Oh no, I don't feel the fit the profile." and I'm like, "But dude, like, how does that matter?
Yeah.
Like, you have like 15 years of experience or something. Like, why do you even?"
Yeah.
So there's there's that as well.
By the way, you're the fifth person on this podcast that is together with someone with the same profession.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, great minds meet alike.
Free mentorship, right?
Oh, it's more like they understand when you start whining about like why Unity birth only accepts certain types, and they actually get what you're talking about. And I think that's very important, that when you start just, you know, complaining about your day and they actually understand how hard it is, or like, oh my god, I have to fix the bug that only appears in the on the console and not on the editor.
Yeah.
Or any other platform. It's like, and they understand. So I think there's that, but also like, I think people in game dev are generally special people.
Yeah.
Because they're so driven, like, you know, you and I, like all of the people that are working in games industry could very much work in any other industry, like in I don't know, medical programming and shit sum of money and just probably have much better working conditions without crunch and blah blah.
Yeah.
But we still choose to do it, and that's why we're being paid less, because everyone knows that, and they kind of riding the wave of us willing to do this.
Yep.
But yeah, we're just special people with special interests, and you know, your vibe attracts your tribe.
Yeah.
So you're always gonna end up in something like this, and just this mutual connection of just the hardship.
Wow, yeah, that's like truer words could not be spoken. Like, you're so right about that. I think. The problem with us getting paid less is that we really, 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 really want to do this as a job. But like, if you look at the contracts, especially with the like bigger companies, AAA or whatever, they don't even allow you to talk about things. Like, they don't even allow you to be on a podcast. Like, I've invited some people and they were all like, you know, let's not do it this year, you know, like, let's do it next year. It's just too much right now. Too much paperwork. And I was like, what is in your contract? What is in your contract? Yeah. Does it state in your contract? You shall not talk unless you tell us. Like, what the... you know?
Yeah, I wonder what the non... was that non-concurrency? Like, how is that called? Agreement that you
exclusivity?
Can't have... Exclusivity kind of things, like, well, you can't even talk about yourself because you're gonna get headhunted after that.
What?
With someone.
Wow.
And bought under the table. I heard stories like that, but that was like American market, so it's quite specific in that way.
This is insane. It's like you're using my passion for video games against me, basically, to. Profit or
at the same time they require you to develop your skills in your own time after work.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, keep investing in yourself. We're not gonna pay you for attending courses or anything.
Yeah. But vaguely, right?
I don't know. Like, I had some you can have performance reviews when that's mentioned sometimes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh?
Wow.
But that happened to me, but way back in the past. There are some practices here, so this is quite a dirty industry, I would say. But
well, listen,
I think
the future will be, and I'm saying that like since a month or two, that the games industry is going to turn into a Hollywood, basically meaning. You know how actors get paid? They all do freelancing. They don't work for a specific company. They all gather around with people that they really want to work with. Eventually, they worked enough with people that, you know, they would be called again for the same job or for a similar role. And so far, I started my freelance career basically a year ago. And it was exactly that. Like, I would be hired for a project. And, you know, we know that we're going to say goodbye to each other. We both have our rights. I have my rights to be on a freaking podcast or do whatever the heck I want in my free time. And by the end of the day, if there was a project again with these people, they know who to call. Because I got the job done, basically. And the more people you work with, the more they're going to come back to you. And I just feel like the future is not risk... How to say? So, like, big companies, they do the... In my opinion, they do, like, mediocre games that have been already released. There's no risk taken. You know, there's this part. No, it's part two. It's part three. It's part four. No risk taken, really. Like, we're just gonna play it safe. And I don't think this is the future. I think people are bored. They want to see novelty. They want to see novelty in games. That's why you see, like, Lethal Company as a game, like, taking off, right? People want to see new stuff. People, like, the envelope of games is just have been not pushed for so long. Like, it's all, like, recycled games. Recycled with different titles. Yes. Yeah. And yes.
It's the suits and the stakeholders driving the creativity, and that's you can see really see this in like the big names, right? The big names. There is a reason why you didn't get a good GTA for 10 years. Yeah. There is a reason. That reason is cash. You can say that about a lot of projects, and as you said, like the installments of an installment. Yeah. But I think that the best I agree with you with that being on the freelancer side and like people coming back to you to want to work with you, because I think that's the highest form of appreciation you can ever get at work. And I got that also recently when someone reached out for me for their work with the past and asking if I want to work with them. So I'm also on a freelancer route at this point, and it's like I never felt nicer about myself than like I didn't feel like, oh, I made it, you know. It's like so I think that's the highest form of appreciation. And for the games, we definitely see the rise of smaller studios, of smaller teams. For example, Expedition 33, which is for me right now definitely game of the year. That's like absolutely amazing, and that was done with just the work of passion for JRPGs. That was finally JRPGs when made good. I'm gonna say it.
Oh damn!
I'm saying very controversial thing.
Yeah.
Basically, Persona with personality. There we go.
Oh, damn. Okay. Easy on the guys there.
The fighting system. Oh, it's just a joy. Cool. Wonderful game.
Yeah. Yep.
Definitely the turn-based, but combat, this is the way to go. And it's finally someone did something innovative in this. And that was also done by a very small team with some contractors and mostly juniors.
Wow.
So, if you look behind the scenes, mostly juniors, right? Like, juniors are an investment.
That's what a lot of, like, the bigger companies don't understand. Like, you have passionate people that really, really want to learn, and you don't want to hire them. Like,
what? Yeah, there was this whole stagnation in that department. Like, it's so incredibly weird, especially that I attended an event in November, and that was a graduation event at the big school, game dev school, in here in Kortrijk in Belgium. And just the level of those juniors, of just people, like, you know, graduating, is incredible. There was better stuff that I could see from some seniors, better portfolios. So they will have to learn like the ropes as like being efficient, blah 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 blah. But that's like you only learn that with time anyways.
Yeah. No, we want juniors that have 3 years of experience. What?
Yeah, of course.
How is that
like
possible?
Yeah, we want like you know, this very known meme that's like we at least in what's in architecture as well. That you send toddlers to building sites so they can start learning, you know, not in the sandbox, but like, just play with the sand, but build bricks.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's quite ridiculous. But there's this lack of like human factor in hiring as well, because like it's the AI that filters us.
You would think human resources would mean that you know a thing or two about humans, but it became that just it is just resources. It's just materialistic. We want this, this, and that, and we don't care. Basically, that's how I feel sometimes.
It sometimes feels like you're being drained by the very big machine of data, that you're just a database piece.
Yeah.
I was also, when you get approached on LinkedIn and you're getting approached by like very random things that like, it's totally not relevant to you.
Yeah.
But it still finds you and it's like, how? Fix your algorithm.
It's just AI. Yeah.
It's just AI these days. Yes, these days it's just AI.
I wonder what AI knows about me sometimes. It's like, oh yeah, hey, Jack the journalist, he does podcasts and stuff like that. I wonder if someone was like looking me up with AI, what the results would be, you know? Like, what do they know even about me? You know?
Yeah.
But anyway, like I wanted to say, generally, we should go back a little bit to you and like pivot to your first years of like learning. So I wanted to ask... can you take us through your journey into art? What did you start with, you know, and also like, was there a hobby, that you practiced or like, did on the side that has nothing to do with tech art that opened your eyes to tech art?
That opened my eyes to tech art. I'm a very curious person. Mm. I have ADHD. I have autism.
Yes.
Nice. As it turned out very late in my life. So I'm interested in various things. I just see something and I'm like, oh, what's that? That looks cool.
Yeah.
So a lot of my first years at the company I spent by like looking at people's screens and I noticed something cool. I was asking, hey, how'd you make it? And that's how I get into rigging as well. I did a course on... just before I graduated, I started traveling to a different city, like 500 kilometers away, to attend a course in animation.
Yeah.
And that's where I learned rigging, and I absolutely fell in love with that because it's so beautifully logical.
Yeah.
So it's one of the best things to do. I still love it the most. It's just so logical, and then it starts moving, and it's just so satisfying. But a lot of people find it extremely difficult. But I'm lucky enough that I got a grasp of it. And yeah, I still enjoy it the most. And you can play with puppets.
Yeah.
That's what we used to do with my sister a lot. So as children.
Yeah.
So that's what opened my eyes. What else would it be? Definitely drawing. Because as you want to attend architecture studies at university, you have to take the drawing tests to get in. So that was a big thing. But I also always wanted to draw. I always liked to draw. And we also had a run for our lives in architecture because you get to learn every aspect of art, I would say, because you have photography classes, you have sculpture classes. You have painting classes, so you get to learn all the color theory, like the 3D composition, how it works, because it's also like a lot of buildings as well, which is like needed in every game.
True.
And that also proved to be very very useful when I was working on an open world game like Division 2, because we had to make some buildings that were like not there, but they were similar enough or like significant enough. So there was a lot of like people could just over talk to me and it's like, we have to do it.
Yeah.
Like which how to fix the entrance and blah blah.
Nice.
So there's a lot of that. Any particular interest of mine? Definitely filmography. This is something that I really enjoy.
Nice.
Like watching good cinematography movies, like how does that works, if how colors change between the just cinematography on its own. Like, we don't have that in Poland.
Yeah.
We don't have a role of cinematographer. This is purely Hollywood invention, and I think is very important, and that's what makes an entire movie. And I think the game application that also has a lot of game application, and especially in games like Death Stranding, because that's very cinematic.
Yeah.
And especially in those planes when you just walk and there's music, and it's just so beautiful.
Yeah.
So general love of nature for me.
Yeah.
Like, I hike every day with my dog, and that's the most important part of my day.
So also nature inspires you in its own logic, like trees and leaves and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
the way
like,
they move.
You know, like, that's the beauty of it, because you can see mathematics everywhere.
Yeah, it's kind of
you
like...
You know, there's yeah. Fibonacci and plants and everything.
Also, when you fly on an airplane and you look down, you're like, oh, a noise texture, I see.
Yeah, also trees are fractals and all of that. Like, you can go on and on.
Exactly.
And it's just beautiful. But it's also like when your mind rests, at least mine, because it's usually racing all the time. And then just being in open space, when it's usually only me and my dog, and there's just wind and the white noise of just plants waving, like, it's just this. And I think that's very important to have when you work on your screens, and then you often end up like spending your free time also on the screen because we want to play games, right?
Yep.
So true. There's a lot, at least in my life, there's a lot of that, and I'm turning to another screen after work. And
yeah, listen, I think like as humans, we're, as much as we think like we are made to be out, I argue the opposite of that. I'm like, we used to hunt maybe once every 2 weeks, and the rest we just spend in the freaking cave watching the fire burn. So there's really not, I don't think we're practicing something that we did not practice before, you know, sitting down in front of something that flickers, that's basically fire. That's why we look at the screen, basically. Anyway, so I wanted to go back into like shaders and stuff like that. What brought you into HLSL? That's something I always find very interesting. Like, what is specific interest it is to be like, to wake up one day and be like, oh, hello there, HLSL. How's it going?
So my favorite part of... Because I started as a 3D artist, that I didn't mention. I started as a 3D artist. I was changed to a technical artist after 2 years of being 3D artist, just because I was doing all the rigging things and blah, blah, and small scripts. And then I was taken under the wing of the only tech artist we had on the team. But I started as a 3D artist, and my favorite thing to do when I was doing even architectural visualizations was making materials. It was like when it stopped being a white cube. because this is where you feel like you're doing something starting to look like a thing. And then when I knew Shader Graph, I knew some stuff there. Before Shader Graph was even something else, I don't remember what that was, but Unity 5 kind of ages, so ages ago, there was a different node editor. But other than that, you were writing shaders in C, in CG, I mean, and HLSL. And CG is a bit of a easier language than HLSL.
Mm-hmm.
I did a course on CG first, and that I was just amazed what you can do, like, oh, tricks with stencil buffer, you know. It was like, what? Like, all the x-ray shaders and whatnot. So that got me very interested, and actually what brought me to HLSL specifically is the introduction of HDRP. And as Unity loves to do, that was experimental package first.
Yeah.
And nobody knew how to make HDRP shader from scratch, because you couldn't do it in the
CG.
Shader graph.
Yeah.
You couldn't do it in CG. You couldn't do it in Shader graph.
Too simple.
Yeah, that would be like, you know, experimental package. There you go.
Yay.
And I remember there was one repository of this this one guy that actually started doing HLSL shaders in HDRP with including geometry shaders and whatnot. That was our source. Because at that point, I remember I was working with the graphics programmer, extremely talented guy, Dimitro. And even he was like, I have no idea. It's just, it's so many references. It was so bizarre. And the only way was to do was just like copy paste half of the shader and work from that.
But
that's how it went. Just like trying to do some something beautiful when you couldn't. There's no other means. It's like when it pushes you towards that. So that's what happens. And then that was learning learning Unreal Engine, and there was also you could write your own notes, but you had to write them in HLSL. So that's what happened as well.
Nah, it's the necessity. What is it called? The necessity creates the.
Necessity.
I forgot the other word.
The need.
The need. Yes. Yes. Exactly. And after, you know, that was like my my realization so far, like talking to so many other artists that say the same thing. You know, back then there was no courses about this and that. There was no courses about creature effects. There was no courses about tech art, right? But the necessity basically created the need, and so we just started learning. And we researched it and we started learning. Same thing with VFX,
books?
Like real-time VFX. Books, yeah. Some people just like, you know,
books,
they come...
I still have books. on this, on real-time rendering and stuff, like it's still there.
Oh yeah. Okay.
So, yeah. Well, so that was a thing. Yeah.
You should give me the name of the books. We put them in the link in the description. Definitely.
Sure. Sure. We'll do.
Okay. So, how would you learn from a book like that? Do they go like, okay, you want to do this shader, do ABC, or what do they talk about?
No, that's actually my favorite book. Is actually Applied Mathematics in Games.
Yeah.
So it actually takes you through all the... Because shaders are mostly mathematics.
Absolutely.
I'm going to say that.
Yes.
For me, it's mostly mathematics. And then there's syntax. And that's that. So you learn about all the matrices, transformations, and all of that. And the most feared Euler versus quaternion, right?
Yeah.
the most feared one. And so on and so forth. So you just learn the basics of 3D through mathematics, because this is what it is. This is pure mathematics applied to something.
Yeah.
And this is where you go. And that's a very important book. And the another one is the real time rendering, and when this actually talks about the application of certain techniques.
Okay.
In certain things, so you get like the grasp, the general grasp of how's that being done, and then you can develop more into looking for that mathematics, basically, because like 3D renderings as well, like maths, applied maths.
So how do you take the book like that and then say, all right, I'm gonna do the practice? Because I would imagine you would. Like any other skill, you would do it over and over and over again until you perfection it, right? Do you still use the book for reference?
Come back to reference when I'm doing something that I didn't do for a longer time. For example, like I bet you use that as well, that you have one random algorithm, like, you know, the one sign, Sina one, but there's like so many of them, and sometimes it's better to take another one and just to have that and the visualization next to it, because you get the graphs, like how that randomness looks like.
Yeah.
Makes you allows you to make better choice, because yeah, sure, you can ask ChatGPT, but you can actually make a conscious decision without ChatGPT choosing it for you. You can then go to ChatGPT, hey, how would you write it down? Because maybe you're not good at reading the
mathematics
symbol, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's one thing, that's the mathematics reading, but that's not turn it into code. That's a different story.
Yeah.
That's again syntax and blah blah.
When was the first time you learned this? Did you learn it with being an architect in the university?
Yes.
Okay. So that was
because that gets you vector math. Because building mechanics is basically vector math with additions.
Okay, but that's good.
so So that's where you learn all of the basics. So the basics of 3D rendering is vectors, and this is where you take it from. So a lot of things started made sense to me.
Yeah.
But also the fact that when you learn you learn from building mechanics, if you didn't learn it before on your mathematics in high school, is that every function has a visual representation. Every function has a it has a Cartesian visual representation, and that helps you with curves, for example, for mathematical curves, that you can take it makes it easier when you have to programmatically animate something.
Okay.
Which is very popular these days, for example.
Okay, so for example, now I have zero knowledge with whatever you're doing, right? And I want to be that as a viewer now listening to you, like you're triggering all the good points in whatever the viewer is like, okay, yeah, I want to start learning that. What do you see right now as resources that you would give people, that you would suggest to people? You'd be like, you know what? Yeah. If I started now, I would go right there.
If I started now, if I wanted to do shaders, I would do Ben Cloward series. Ben Cloward is extremely experienced graphics programmer, I think, or graphics artist. And he creates all the shader effects in two engines at the same time, in Unity and in Unreal Engine.
Cool.
So not only, and it creates that with shader graph, but as I said at the start, this is something that can be preferred in many studios. You can learn what's the difference in semantics. Because, yeah, of course, the nodes were going to be called different. I think the one is OpenGL, the other is the other one. Don't remember. Never mind.
Coda?
But one is Vulkan, one is OpenGL. Vulkan. And what's the differences, right? And now it's like the whole thing is the Z up, is the Y up.
Okay.
All the joys of are very important in 3D graphics. So he will take you through it, and you can see the differences, and you can see that it's also very interesting to see that the same effect will look a bit different, even if you use the same textures, use the same nodes and all of that, but they will still look a little bit different.
Interesting.
And he starts from very basic to very advanced effects. So I definitely would go that route, because I think it's like the most comprehensive right now, from free resources, they can just go on YouTube and just learn that. No paywall, nothing.
Yep.
So, yeah, definitely would go with that.
Any other resources in regards to, like, the other things that you do at work?
Whatever channel that explains mathematics that you understand.
Yep.
Because it's probably the best to find. There are so many mathematics channels that explain things in a certain way that maybe be your way, that you will understand it. But the general feeling that you like mathematics and you're interested in it, and you have that, you don't have that fear of mathematics.
Yeah.
That a lot of us got from school. Yep. I think that's a lot of people got that scar from school, and mathematics is actually a very awesome thing. But that's what, find a source that will let you learn, because I believe that with so many resources right now, there will be one that you will be your preferred, and that's what you will be like suddenly, aha, you know?
Yeah.
Like you finally get those quaternions right. So definitely that, just like Google a concept, go on YouTube, go any other resource. Maybe try ChatGPT, explain me it as if I'm five, or explain me it to me as on Lego blocks. That's one of the fun prompts to understand like bigger concepts, something simple.
All right, so
that also works.
We're reaching the last 5 minutes of the podcast. Is there anything you would like to mention, promote, talk about before we say goodbye to everybody?
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. Always look at how it's made videos, because you can learn a lot from that. And I know that GDC is behind a paywall, but the older the talks get, the more of them get on YouTube. And often, more often than not, there are extra resources linked to them. So, for example, the famous clouds from Horizon Zero Dawn, the first one, there is like entire concept explained and like a PDF that they link to it. So you could try and make your own ray traced clouds.
Wow.
And how cool is that? So that's the cool stuff is out there, because like we have to remember that we are still in the very specific and one-of-a-kind industry where we don't gatekeep knowledge, where we share it. What else industry just has a pages of code, Stack Overflow, thank you for existing, that you can just learn so much from.
Yeah.
And of course, check out Inigo Quiles if you need more awesome things to inspire you to go that route. Check out inigoquiles.com. It's an amazing mathematician from Spain, and that guy is amazing. And his website ShaderToy, that you can also write very quick shaders when that render on the screen, so you can also practice writing shaders. This is very specific because it's shader toy code, but it's very easy to grasp, and you can see the samples and you can find out about the most amazing concept, my absolute favorite, hopefully future of 3D graphics, is signed distance fields and what you can do with them.
Wow.
I will leave it this.
I will talk to you later as we wrap up now to have all those links in the description. Because I myself would love to check all of these things because it affects a lot my work and VFX. Alexandra, this has been very insightful, inspiring. And yeah, it's just always amazing to talk to tech artists.
Tech Artists Unite.
Yes, Tech Artists team here. Absolutely. All right, as always, guys, I'm Jack the Generalist, and I will see you in the next one. Bye, everybody.